Hello and welcome to today's show on What the Experts Know on Learning and Education, a show dedicated to finding more meaningful and fun ways for children to learn and to expand into their full potential than what traditional schools are willing to offer. My guest today is a renowned leader in spirituality with a huge heart for children, Ellen Hayakawa. Ellen is the founder of the Divinely Inspired Leaders, where people ages 6 to 66 receive training and coaching to lead extraordinary lives of passion, purpose, and meaning so that they express their unique creativity, their gifts, their talents, and their messages into this world. She has coached, trained, and mentored children and youth, their families, as well as teachers, educators, and health professionals, including doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, for over a decade. By helping them discover their spiritual wisdom, including psychic, healing, and intuitive gifts, she has helped many to achieve greater happiness, self-esteem, self-confidence, love, joy, peace, and as well as applying their inner guidance to decision-making in their daily lives. She has also been a bridge to help adults, including parents, educators, and health professionals, understand more deeply what is going on in the spirits and souls of children and youth, especially those who have been diagnosed with learning challenges and disorders, and those who are spiritually gifted who behave in ways not easily understood in our present paradigm of families, education, and health. Ellen is also a pioneer of spirituality and business and started to bring out the message throughout the 90s. She has now expanded her reach to millions of people via television and radio and speaking on stages with luminaries like Deepak Chopra, Matthew Fox, Carol Pearson, as well as on telesummits with other teachers such as Marci Shimoff and John Asaraf. She's the author of The Inspired Organization, Spiritually and Energy at Work, and co-author of 3 books, including Amazon bestseller, Healing the Heart of the World, Harnessing the Power of Intention to Change Your Life and Your Planet, which has been the winner of Best Inspirational Spiritual Book of the Year, and which she co-authored with such luminaries as Neil Donald Walsh, John Gray, Bruce Lipton, Masaru Emoto, Joan Berisenko, and others. Ellen's mission is global peace in our lifetime. She believes that global peace can be achieved if we each do our purpose and divinely inspired vision of work, and if we work together individually and collectively to achieve inner and outer peace. Welcome, Ellen Hayakawa.
Thank you so much, Astrid. Thank you so much for organizing this amazing telesummit on what the experts know in learning and education. I'm really delighted and honored to join you and to share my knowledge about children and youth, and also I would like to just really honor your listeners for taking the time and energy to listen to this series, and really, because I know that all of us all together are really have at the foremost, it's really that in our hearts we really care about children and youth.
Starting out, why don't you share a little bit about your background and what led you from being an extremely sober and scientifically minded wildlife biologist to your current dedication of bringing spirituality into this world?
Yes, Astrid, my story is, as you said, I was a very left-brained scientist. I was working as a professional wildlife biologist in the federal government of Canada. And also my background is that I have a degree in biology and mathematical sciences, which is math, statistics, and computing. And I was doing that job for about 10 years. And when I started out, it was my dream job. It was my passion. Since I was a child, I loved the earth and had a passion for the earth and did a lot of traveling in the wilderness. But after about 10 years at that job, I felt very depressed. And I really felt like that job, that profession wasn't what I had come here to the planet to do. And I actually set the intention to really figure out what my life purpose was and what I was here to do. And I had what I would call a mystical experience. I had a dream, and in the dream I was light, and I was inside the light, I was outside the light. It was a dream on the night of my 35th birthday. And up until that point, because I was really quite unhappy at my job, I was depressed and, you know, just felt like, that's the point really, when you're not doing your purpose and when you're not using your gifts to the full extent, you know, you can't help but feel depressed. So anyway, on the night of my 35th birthday, I had this dream of light, and it was as though through that dream that my psychic and intuitive gifts were really opened up, and I heard the words, "You are to bring the word spirit and spirituality into the consciousness of people in mainstream workplaces." And I've spent the last 18 years really helping to pioneer that particular field of work and endeavor. And, you know, collectively, it's not only been me, but there have been many, many other people called to do that. Many of them around the same time. That was in 1994. And, so that field, I consider that to be really anchored in many ways into the mainstream now, because there are, centers at universities, and it's being taught in Masters in Business Administration programs. And for me, that then activated also this work with children, which is interesting. In 1997, I also had a vision, a dream about having a global peace summit, which I organized. I brought together a team, and people attended that event. And about that time, a friend of mine said that she was going to bring a video to my home, and she said that in the video there was a young 18-year-old woman who was demonstrating on stage. She was a speaker at a conference, and she was demonstrating on stage that she could read books and magazines, that she could read photos that people were handing her from the audience blindfolded. So she was doing that without her eyes. And I had at that point invited some people to my house to watch that video. And there was a 9-year-old boy. And he, after we watched the video, I said to him, "What do you think of that exercise?" And he said, "I think she's lying. I think she actually looked at the pictures, at the photos, before she went on stage, and that was how she knew what was in the photos." And so I said to him and the other adults in the room, you know, "Shall we do this exercise, the one that we saw demonstrated in the video?" And he said yes, you know, he wanted to do it. So he put on the blindfold. And I didn't know if it would work at that time with magazines, because the demonstration had been with a photo, but I used a magazine, and I handed him the magazine, and much to the astonishment of all of us, he could actually scan the magazine, and he was able to say, which was exactly the picture that was there, "There's a blue Jeep in a red desert, and there's a, you know, blue sky behind it." And when I asked him the question, how did you know the difference between red and blue, he said to me, "Red feels warmer and blue feels cooler." And so I, as a scientist, of course, I wondered, you know, is he the only person that can do it? And I'll say that the other adults, including me, tried this exercise with much less success. And also because we were so skeptical, even though we'd seen the demonstration on the video and we were seeing this demonstration right in front of our eyes, we were very skeptical and we thought that he had peeked under the blindfold. So we asked him to put on a second blindfold, and then we actually had him put a wool hat on top of the two blindfolds that he was wearing, and so he had a wool hat with the two blindfolds, and of course he continued to be able to do the exercise. And then the next day, there was going to be a gathering at my friend's retreat center. I live on a little island in the Northwest Pacific, on the coast of Canada, and my friend was having a gathering at the retreat center, and there were going to be people of all ages there, and we thought maybe we would try this at her retreat center with children and youth and all the other people. And again, we did the exercise, and much to our astonishment, all of the children and interestingly enough, many of whom had been diagnosed with disorders, or what we would label as disorders, were able to do this exercise. So there was also one little girl who was later diagnosed with dyslexia, and she could do it. There were children there who hadn't learned how to read yet. They weren't, you know, in grade one, so they hadn't learned how to read. They just knew how to read letters. And they were able to read the letters in the magazines. And I realized there's something that's going on at a collective level that, you know, this, there wasn't just one child who could do this, that there was something that was going on. And the other thing that was actually very astonishing was when I asked one little girl, how can you read books and magazines and newspapers without your eyes, without your physical eyes? She said, I focus on it with my third eye and I read the screens inside my head.
Isn't that amazing? It's mind-blowing. If you think that this is an experiment which actually can be repeated, we've all known of individuals who were able to do certain supernatural things which we deem impossible. But if you think, come to think of it, that many, many children, I suppose not all of them, but quite a number of them are able to do that, that is just mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing, and yet we do know that, you know, consciousness evolves. And I believe that, and we used to write about these things as, you know, science fiction, paranormal abilities that people were really skeptical about. But again, as you know, since I'm a scientist and I was a mathematician and statistician, I did know that it was important to really determine that this wasn't just something that was happening with one or two individuals or, you know, with a certain group of children for whatever reason. And now I've done workshops and trainings over the years. And so I know that this is very widespread. This is, in fact, you know, I think maybe their most six-year-olds can do this. Before we permeate them with the belief system that, for example, they need their outer eyes to read, they already have an intuitive sense that they can read with what we would call, the third eye is called the inner eye. And, you know, as we have taught children and youth there, that there are certain outer senses. You know, we have our ears to hear, we have our eyes to see, we have our nose to smell, you know, we have our mouth to taste. But in fact, for every outer sense, there is also an inner sense. And that's what the children are using. And it's not just children, they're adults. Now that I've done all generations workshops, you know, there was one grandfather who came and did the exercise just as well as any six-year-old could do it. So it's not just something that's all of a sudden popped up and it's just exclusive to children. I do believe that they're the wake-up call for us as adults That in fact we also have these multidimensional ways of knowing and perceiving and receiving information and learning. And what we can what we now label as disorders, which I just think doesn't do any favor to the children, because, for example, that first young boy who did the exercise, after he finished doing it and he realized that he could read these magazines blindfolded, he said to me, and that was the first time I understood, you know, what he was going through. He said, I've just been diagnosed with ADD and I have just been put in a special needs class because I can't read to my grade level in school. But now I've just found out that I can do something that other people can't do. And it was obvious that he was so proud of himself. It was also obvious to me that somehow his self-esteem and his self-confidence had been eroded by being labeled as having special needs and not being able to read to his grade level. And I think that that's also, you know, was a fascinating part of this phenomena, is that he couldn't read to his grade level, and yet he could read books and magazines and newspapers, you know, from across the room.
Well, and the other thing I always say is, you know, that the developmental acceleration in children is very, very different, and it's totally nuts to assume that every six-year-old is at the same developmental stage regarding anything like reading or writing or skill sets that we deem important. Research has lately shown that six-year-olds differ by up to 3 years, and 13-year-olds differ by up to 6 years in their developmental stages. And so comparing anyone by grade level is in itself already an insult to these children, because many of them, if you look at Waldorf schools, they are not interested in reading and writing until they are 8 or 9 years old. And then when they are 8 or 9, it takes them less than half a year and they are perfect readers. And if you put these tame children into a normal grade school, then they are being labeled as not reading at grade level and special needs. And you have to give them special. And all these labels obviously contribute to the child of losing their own self-confidence, their own self-esteem, and thinking that something's wrong with them, and then they tend to become self-fulfilling prophecies in the negative respect.
Yes,
thank you for sharing that.
Yes, absolutely.
So was he able to start reading after a while, or was he only able to discern pictures from without being blindfolded?
Yes, he could read words, and you know, the children who have come to workshops and trainings, they can read the words very clearly. And I've done this with a teacher with a group of teens, and it was interesting because most of them could not do this exercise and read the words, but there was one teen in that group, which happened to be probably a group of 10 youth, and she could read the words, you know, and most people astonish themselves when they can do that. And, so it's not just, again, it's not exclusive to children. It just really, some of it has to do, I think, also with the beliefs, you know. Once they become a certain age, we are saying to them, this is the way that you read. You read with your outer eyes, and that's the kind of instruction that they get in schools. But if we just leave it wide open, you know, as I do in the workshops, and as you're saying, there are so many different ways, which I've also understood through giving these workshops and listening to children and youth and how they process information or how they know things. There are very, very many different ways of being able to have knowledge. There was one child who came, and she actually smelling the magazine. And in this work, I found that as an adult, you know, we all have our preconceived ideas of how children are going to do things, and that includes me. And what I find is all the time I have to just drop any belief or assumption that I might make. And what I saw her smelling the magazine, and I kind of thought to myself, oh, she's not going to get the word by smelling the magazine, is she? And then she said the word, which was peppermint, and I could see, yes, that was the word that was, you know, in the magazine. And she was also blindfolded. So later on, when we had the community circle where we sit down and we talk about our experiences, I asked her, how did you get the word peppermint? And I thought, again, in my own adult brain and with my own preconceived ideas, that she was going to say, I smelled peppermint. And instead what she said was, I smelled pepper. And I asked her, what kind of pepper? And she said, red pepper. And I thought, okay, how did she get to peppermint from smelling red pepper? And then she said, and then I saw the color green. And I said to myself, pepper green. No, that doesn't make any sense. It must be peppermint. So what I then concluded was that there was, for the way that she was able to receive information was through smelling, but she smelled red peppers, and she then put that together with green. She saw the color green, and so she said pepper green, and then she used logical deduction, and she said pepper green doesn't make sense. It must be peppermint. That's a whole
which is an amazing.
Yeah,
it's a very complex way of dealing with this issue. And what I'm just struck with, I have a friend who recently had a baby, and she was totally devastated because this girl was born without eyes, never able to see, because obviously with no eyes at all, no amount of modern medicine is going to make you see. But if I envision what is possible for this kind of baby to be able to read and see the world through their third eye instead of through their physical eyes, I mean, what an enormous hope for any parent who thinks that their child is disabled, handicapped.
Absolutely. And I would actually, there is an interesting thing that the example that you're giving is actually also connected to an experience that I had with a little girl. She was actually the girl who said the very first child, because again, since I've done many, many workshops, many all the children say something like, some children will say, I read the screens inside my head. Or I focus on it with my eye. I read these screens inside my head. And, that little girl, the first little girl who said to me, I focus on it with my third eye and I read the screens inside my head, who, by the way, was dyslexic. She was diagnosed as having, what we again classify as a disorder. And all I say is that it's a learning difference. It's a consciousness difference. Because she has she had so many gifts, and she has so many gifts. And so she said to me 2 years later, the most important thing, so at that point she would have been 9 years old, and she said, the most important thing that I ever learned in my entire life, which was 9 years at that point, was that I can read books and magazines and newspapers without my eyes. And I said to her, well, why is that? Why is that the most important thing for you? And she said, because when I was 4 years old, my mother read me a story. And it was about a man who was blind. And he had all kinds of challenges. For some reason, he had to lead a horse back to his home. And he had to go through all kinds of obstacles. He was blind. He couldn't see the world. And he had to cross, this river and find the bridge. And, he faced all kinds of challenges, but because he had faith, she said, because he had faith in himself and he had faith in God and spirit, he was able to lead this horse home. And she said that because he had such faith, his sight was restored. And then I didn't quite get why, you know, why was still this the most important thing that she'd learned. But she said then, since my mother read me that story, what I've always wanted to do is teach blind children how to ride horses. And now I can teach them that they don't need their physical eyes to be able to ride horses and to be able to see.
Wow. Yes, it's incredible what possibilities open up once we decide that we don't want to discard these possibilities right at front because they're so unusual to our ordinary way of thinking. Once we open up our minds to what else is possible, obviously much more is possible than what we have ever dreamt of what could be done. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. And I do think I'll say that my whole world really, you know, has been opened up by working with children and youth and discovering that they have all these very unique ways of perceiving the world, in ways that we haven't even necessarily let ourselves imagine. And that it really is when they're surrounded by people who are open and, you know, will speak about these gifts and give them a safe and secure place to really express themselves. They love to do, for example, these fun games and exercises and then share with us their inner knowledge, which for so many years in our society and our civilization, I really believe that there hasn't been a focus on the spiritual. There hasn't been a focus. If we look in our education system, there's nowhere, and I won't say nowhere, but often education, spiritual gifts are actually ignored. And
well, what is even worse in mainstream education, not only are spiritual gifts ignored, but they are made silly. People are made, our children are made wrong for these spiritual gifts. And even today, if a child talks about angels he or she is seeing or fairies she's playing with, 9 out of 10 people will say you're crazy and stop imagining and come down to reality. That's just crazy stuff.
Yes. Yes, and
that's the reason why I'm interviewing you today, because I really want to make it very, very clear to our listeners that once you open up to other possibilities, so much more is possible in this world. And especially with all these children who are diagnosed with symptoms like autism or ADHD or dyslexia or OCD, you have found a wonderful well of help, a wonderful way of helping these children.
Thank you, Astrid. Yes, and I really... my heart's desire is to really empower parents, teachers, educators, and health professionals to open up to this whole realm, which is the spiritual dimension. And so that, you know, we have to start with ourselves as adults and really recognize that aspect of ourselves before we can actually facilitate that process for children. And I've been very concerned about the number of children who are diagnosed with depression and bipolar, and you know, again, we talk about them as disorders. One of the things that I've found in my coaching and mentoring work with children and youth is they often come and they're very distressed because they've been to a whole line of professionals within education or health, and they haven't really been able to get to really make progress and become happier in their lives, and they behave in ways that most people can't understand, that adults don't necessarily understand. But when you think about how energy sensitive a child has to be if they can read a book or a magazine across the room, so that's what they're really tuning into. And it also requires that children be in very different brainwave states. And we do know that when, for example, when children are born, that they're in the delta state, which is that state of being in the moment. You know, a child expresses exactly what they're feeling, so they can be crying one moment and then they're happy and in joy in another moment. And they're just freely expressing, and they, you know, we say that's when a child is closest to God. And in fact, their brainwave states move along, and so part of it is that, when children are able to do, you know, perceive in multidimensional ways, they're often in the theta brainwave state, which is really also the state of creative genius. It's that state when we have a problem and we're looking for a solution and all of a sudden we're standing in the shower and, you know, the shower can induce the theta brainwave state, or sometimes you might be on a long drive and all of a sudden you say, aha, I know how to do that. And we find, you know, again, in the animal world, we find that horses, for example, are in the theta brainwave state, which is why they're so sensitive to what's even going on with us as human beings. So they're very empathic. And lots of these children are very empathic, and that is also what makes it challenging for them to be in a classroom. Because I've had children who come and they say that it's very difficult for them to be in a classroom because they are feeling the emotions of every child in that room. And that for them can be extremely overwhelming. And so it's really important for us to be able to equip our children and youth who are that energy sensitive to, you know, to be able to handle these situations and be able to be in places where that might be challenging, but also to help them to know when they actually need to remove themselves from a situation, because sometimes it is just too overwhelming for them, and they need to be able, from their own inner truth, from their own inner guidance, which is all of what this is, you know, from their own intuition, which I really feel is what we need to be doing with children, is helping them to find where, you know, their heart, to follow their heart, to follow their passions, to express their gifts, and also to be able to know deeply what is healthy for them.
Which brings up a huge challenge. What if you allow in traditional schools these children, when they realize that the environment, the situation, the energy in the classroom is so overwhelming for them that they feel they need to remove themselves? In a traditional classroom, the teacher would normally start punishing that child, which is only self-protecting himself.
Yes. And I think there is, you know, as we move along with this, we may recognize that, and that's also what I'm hoping, is that because there are so many energy-sensitive children out there, and there are more and more and more, and I believe that this is an evolutionary state of the human species, that we will be able to provide those kind of places, really honor a child's need to possibly go to a place where that's a bit quieter, so that, you know, we might have a quiet room, a place where they can go and just have some quiet or silence or some relaxing music, so that they can come back to that state of centeredness and groundedness, which is really what it requires. And being centered and grounded, as we all know, whether we're adults or children, you know, is really a lifetime practice. And but we can start to give them some of those tools. And then also to know, I think, to have this awareness that children like this are in the classroom. And I know that at one point I was speaking to a teacher, and he was a supply teacher in schools, And he said to me, which is another interesting thing about the way that these children learn and their capacity, I'd say their capacity and their ability to learn and know things, at these workshops that I give, because there are people of all ages. So actually I've had a child who was in the womb at one of my workshops, but generally the children are about 6 years old, and it's an all generations workshop. So I have grandparents in the room, so there can be from, you know, 6 to 76 sitting in the room. And when I reach the part where I speak about the various inner gifts, the children often leave the room because it's actually very linear, intellectual kind of exercise. And I always say to parents, you know, it's, or their grandparents, oh, it's fine that the children go to the other room. And I said, I'll be calling them back when, it's time for us to move into the actual exercises. And so in one workshop, the children went to the other room, and I had an intuitive feeling that they didn't need to be in the room because I thought that the material might be a bit boring for them, or they already just have knowledge of this. What I asked when I went later on at the end of the workshop, because I was starting also myself to kind of clue into how these children are learning, and I said to one of the girls who had gone to play in the other room, I said, do you know what's going on? When I'm teaching in the other room, do you know what's going on there? And she said, of course we do. And so I said, okay, how do you know that? And because this was at the end of the workshop, she said, and she had an experience of reading without her eyes, she said to me, you know, in the way that children will say to you when they're kind of frustrated that you don't get it, she said, it's just the same as the exercise of reading books and magazines and newspapers without your eyes. You can play in this room, and then you focus on the other room with your third eye, and you know everything that's going on in the other room.
Which is scary to some adults if you want to keep secrets. And you have to realize that your children know what's going on anyway. And if you continue this way of thinking, then you will start to understand that there may also be adults who can hear, quote-unquote, through walls and be aware of what's going on, and maybe not even in the neighboring room, but maybe in a different part of the city.
Absolutely. And I think that this, learning these things that, you know, the way children learn, is really going to turn education upside down in a sense, because look at the capacity of these children. They can play and they can learn. That's what they're saying at the same time. And so that gives them, to me, greater capacity and ability, you know, than I ever had to be able to do many things at once or receive, you know, lots of information and knowledge. And you're absolutely right on. I also feel that with these children and youth, and they've told me that, I know we do telepathic exercises, and so sometimes before we even start the exercises, they'll say, I know what's going on in the minds of other people. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, again, I think these are things that we can all do. The one thing is that when children perceive that adults, for example, are not aligned, adults are not totally congruent. So in other words, when an adult is saying something, but emotionally they're actually feeling something different, a child will often act out or misbehave, and then often parents or teachers will think that it's actually the child who is misbehaving, when in fact what the child is indicating, and they just don't know how to express it in any other way, is they're really saying, what you're saying to me doesn't make any sense because I can empathically feel, or I know what you're thinking.
what I was just thinking. It's a tragedy because our whole society is based on this, what we have been taught, politeness. Politeness very often is nothing else but saying one thing while you feel another. Being friendly with your words, although you hate aunt, whoever is making a visit in your home. And this is something our whole culture is based on, and these children simply cannot deal with these inconsistencies because they know what you feel, and they expect you to say what is the truth in you, and then if you say something totally different, then they will obviously act on what you feel.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what's happening. And the beauty of it is that they are calling us to be truthful and honest. And that's, in a sense, that's their teaching to us. If we can understand that that's, you know, in a sense, what their behavior is often indicating. And we tend to think that it's the problem of the child. The child has a problem. But in fact, what they're doing is they're mirroring something to us as adults that we really need to deal with, and we need to look at the inconsistencies and the incongruencies within us and what we have just accepted without really thinking about it, often as being just socially acceptable or the norm. So this really is calling us as a civilization, because these children and youth are in families, schools, communities around the world. This is global. It's not, again, in any one place. And I really believe that we all want to live the truth. We all want to live in love. We all want to live in compassion and in passion. And when enough of us do this, then that is when we will have global peace. There's nothing now that really can be hidden if you think about it. There's, because these children exist and they're reading books and magazines and newspapers long distance, there are no secrets left in the world. There can't be secrets, even in our minds or our hearts. It's really calling us to fill ourselves with the love and the compassion that and who we really truly are as divine and human beings on this planet.
And one thing, once I've got you, I really have to pick your mind. You're working one-on-one with especially these children who we label with symptoms, with disabilities. Why don't you tell us a little bit on how you work with these children and what the results are if, for instance, a child with ADHD is acting out wildly and in our quote-unquote senses is misbehaving, totally disrupting family life and making life for everybody really difficult?
Well, what I'll say is that every behavior, behind every behavior, is the true reason for the behavior. And so we have tended to focus on behavior, and we have even a what I call a carrot and kind of stick approach to behavior, where we actually, in a way, manipulate children and say, if you behave like this, then you'll get this. And true, you know, to be a human and divine being in integrity, you want children to really do things out of their own motivation. So part of my job is really to find out what's behind the behavior. And sometimes it's, and often if it's, it seems like it's very challenging behavior to an adult, and often the children themselves are challenged by their own behavior, because it creates unhappy circumstances around them, that make it hard for them to just, you know, really be who they are. But a big part of it is that what they're saying to us is, you're not recognizing me. You are not necessarily recognizing all of my gifts. A child that's been diagnosed with so-called ADHD is often bored. Again, if you think about it, if you can read books and magazines from another room, and but you have to sit, in a classroom at your desk, and yet you're picking all of this up in an instant. I was saying earlier, I started to tell you the story. I talked to the supply teacher, and what he said was, you know, it's really interesting, but I get a list of all the children with ADHD, you know, which children in the classroom when I come in as a supply teacher. And he said, invariably, you'll think that they won't be paying attention. And then when you ask them a question, it's really in some ways frustrating because they give you the right answer. So this,
I know.
This, right, so this kind of explains why this exists. And the reason, part of the reason that they're acting out is because their stimulation level, so the level of stimulation that we're providing, the channels that we're providing for them to be stimulated, does not match their energy levels. That, to me, is the simplest way of being able to express that. And I heard your speaker yesterday, or a couple of days ago, Laura Brown, and she was talking about, you know, boys being very active and the brain differences between boys and girls. And I'll say that I do all my sessions in nature because I feel that, you know, that's the best place to carry out, for example, personal sessions where people, you know, where children come locally, and now children and youth, of course, are starting to come internationally, so it's a little different. But that's the place where they feel open and they feel comfortable. And especially with boys, I'm always doing something with them. So we're hiking, you know, we're looking at things. And then the conversation comes out. And as we start to delve into what kinds of psychic gifts that they have, which they don't necessarily know. They can think that they have OCD or, you know, whatever the diagnosis might be. And I'll say that the children often come to me wearing their labels. So they'll come and they'll say, I have ADHD. I have this. I have that. I have dyslexia. I'm in depression. I've been diagnosed with depression, and I have bipolar or whatever it is. And my response to them is always, you know, I don't really care about the labels that have been put on you, but I really care about who you are and what's in your spirit and soul, and who you are as a spirit and soul, and what you come here to do, and what kinds of gifts you have. So I focus on their gifts. I focus on their gifts and talents, and that's inner and outer gifts and talents, as we've been talking about. And as they recognize that for themselves, as they recognize that there's one adult in the world who can actually understand them, they don't feel isolated and alone anymore, which is another thing that they're indicating, is often they just feel isolated. Imagine if you've got all of these spiritual gifts, you've got all of these inner gifts, and they're crying to get out, but you never hear anybody speaking about any of them. So there's no place to express. And as human beings, we're here to co-creatively express, you know, with others. And so when they start exploring these gifts and acknowledging them and finding out, you know, I've had youth come and they've been diagnosed as psychotic because they happen to see energy, and they do see energy. It is real. It just happens that the professionals that they go to see can't perceive the energies because they're not sensitive enough. And this is not blaming anyone. This is just saying that this is the paradigm that we have been living in education and health and families and communities. And we are moving to this very different era, and which I call the eco-spiritual era. And so when a youth comes and all of a sudden he or she realizes, yes, the energies I'm seeing are real, and I equip them with the tools. If the energies for them are too much or overwhelming, I equip them with the tools. They can clear those energies. And then they explore some of their other gifts, and they're extremely excited because to this point they've just been told that they're mentally ill, they're disordered in some way, you know, which erodes their self-esteem and their self-confidence, which is the biggest, which are the biggest determinants of success really for children and youth, you know, beyond intellectual capability, beyond all of these other things. So their self-confidence and their self-esteem comes back, and they really, I'll say that they just feel embraced by a compassionate and understanding, non-judgmental space where they can explore who they are. And often they'll even be able to articulate, beyond, in fact, most adults. You know, I work with adults, and it's amazing to me how many adults can't really say what their passions are or what their purpose is on this planet. And yet I found that most of these children can do that, or just as the young girl who I was speaking about who said, you know, since I was four, you know, I've wanted to teach blind children how to ride horses. And she's now, I think, 18, and her family now owns an equestrian farm. So she's obviously moving towards her dreams and her passions and her purpose on this planet of really serving. And that really is the number one, the key to happiness is a group of professors at the University of British Columbia did a study and found out, we already knew this about youth and adults, but that really what makes people happy is knowing that they have this meaning and purpose to their lives. And so it's no different now. They did the study with young children, and they found out that that's the case for 8 to 12-year-olds. And so when a child or a youth, you know, and I don't expect a child or youth to know their purpose. I mean, part of growing up, and it doesn't matter, it goes even beyond that, of being an adult is to really, you know, discover the world and find out what you're passionate about. But as they can stand with pride in their own gifts, they really stop wearing their labels. And as you match this kind of stimulation that they need to their energy levels, everything that is considered to be negative behavior falls away. The need for pharmaceutical drugs falls away. In some cases, youth have come and I've asked that they often have multiple diagnoses of disorders. And so, you know, there was one youth who came and he had multiple things going on, I'll say that, and was on many different pharmaceuticals. And one of the disorders he had been diagnosed with was OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And I'm always very straightforward with children. I just assume that they're whole, that they're divinely perfect, and that they have a phenomenal inner knowledge, as we all do, of what's best for them. And if you're straight with them, they will give you the straight answer. And so I said, what's going on with your OCD? And he said to me, I have this OCD because it's connected to my father. And when I'm ready, who was absent at that point, and absent in his life, and he said, when I'm ready to give up this OCD, I will. And I talked to him, actually, a number of years later, and he said, and I said, oh, what happened with OCD? And he said, well, I reconnected with my dad, and then that was the end of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, and what a criminal, I mean, I shouldn't say criminal, but what a very, very limited way of treating our children in schools, making them wrong, and not acknowledging who they are. And I'll just contribute one very minor example I had in my own class. I had a child who had been going through the same school for the past 5 years, and every teacher had been complaining about him, and then I got him into my class because he was so disruptive, and he was obviously ADHD, and he was forever clowning around and distracting the other children. And, of course, he did the same in my classroom, and I caught him when he was just talking to the kids behind him, and I asked him what I was been talking about, and he exactly repeated what I was saying. And then we agreed that he had this wonderful capacity of doing three things at the same time, listening to me, having a conversation with his neighbor, and at the same time building a paper plane on his desk, and that maybe we could come to a common agreement that his neighbors didn't have the same abilities, and that he, although he was able to follow whatever I was instructing, his neighbors weren't, and couldn't we do something about that? And it totally turned him around, and he's a very nice child, and I have no reason whatsoever to complain about this kid, which every teacher in school had already had and said, oh, my goodness, poor you, and now you're getting that terrible guy.
Well, I salute you, Astrid, for being open and for, again, you know, I think the message is really, and that's the work that I've been doing over the years and you've been doing in the mainstream education system. And again, I think it's often unusual, you know, to find teachers. It's just because teachers have so many children to deal with in a classroom. But to be able to deal with an individual where they are and build a bridge into their world. My feeling is that we're constantly trying to fit children into the world of our understanding, the world of how education and learning works, the way the world of health works, and anything that's outside of what we understand is put into a box of this is not normal, this is disordered, this is whatever it is. But the essential thing to understand this, I think this, you know, it's been called an epidemic of children who have special needs, is that we need far more people, parents, teachers, educators, health professionals, to be building a bridge into the children's world, to understand how their minds work, to understand what's in their souls and spirits. You know, we all come here to the planet as being wounded. And so we're in some area of our life, and that's what we're here to do, is really to heal our wounds and to move to another level. And I always say, you know, there's some places wherein we're professors or we're masters. You know, some people have mastery of the spiritual world. Some people have mastery of the emotional world. Some people are masters of the physical world. But that we're also all in kindergarten in another area of our lives, and that's what, you know, we're here to learn. But that's just a phenomenal thing that you did, which was really to build a bridge into his world and really acknowledge him for being able to do all of these different things. And, you know, our next step would still be, he was building a paper airplane, and maybe that's his passionate interest. And, you know, how do we engage children in learning everything about what they're passionate about? Because then they don't, again, they don't act out. They're so engaged in their own lives, in their own passion, with their own motivation, that there's no energy left over to put in other places.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I was so passionate about bringing this information forward that I just brought out a product together with Laura Brown on everything we were speaking about, what you as a teacher, what you as a parent can do simply to connect with your child in a way that you start to understand your child, that you're open to looking at your child through their eyes and not only through yours, and that this can change everything, and that the moment we have the courage to allow children in schools to choose what they want to learn, so many of the problems we perceive as normal in schools will simply go away, because children will have no need to be rebellious if you don't force feed them with information that is absolutely irrelevant to them. I just read this devastating statistics that 95% of 12th graders in the United States actually feel that what they are made to learn has no relevance whatsoever to their life. Of course they're going to rebel.
Yes.
Either they go into depression or they go into rebellion.
Yes.
And it's such a primitive way of us adults to force them back into the old ways of doing things. instead of really starting to open up into what they want, what they need, and acknowledge who they are. That alone can change this world around, I have a feeling.
Absolutely.
My goodness, this call is coming to an end much faster than I'd like to. You've been giving me so much content to our listeners. And I'm so sorry we can't continue for at least another 2 hours, but I know that you have created something which might fill in this gap.
Yes, absolutely, Astrid. If the material that we've been talking about really resonates, and you know, even if it doesn't, if you're a listener and you're willing to open up, open your mind and your heart to this new information, because it really is part of what I consider to be the new information on the leading edge, what I've created are 3 free training videos, and they're an hour long, so they're part of it's a 3-part series. And the series is for you if you're a parent, a grandparent, a teacher, educator, or health professional, or someone who just simply deeply cares about the spirit and soul of children and youth. If you have a child or youth who's struggling at home or at school and you would like to be able to really support them in new and different ways and have some new and different information that if you've been struggling and not finding solutions, this might be part of the pieces of the puzzle. And again, if your child has been, you know, is highly sensitive or has been experiencing depression or has been diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, autism, anxiety, Asperger's, bipolar, dyslexia, and you sense there's something else going on, this series is for you. Or if your child is very spiritually oriented, so I'd say if they talk about angels, fairies, imaginary friends, or past lives, or if they seem to be wise beyond their biological years, so what we would call an old soul, then this training is for you. What I provided in it are things like the 10 essential keys to supporting your children and youth to greater self-esteem, greater happiness, self-confidence, joy, peace, and harmony. And then, you know, to extend the conversation of today, why educational and healthcare professionals may not be able to help your children and youth if they're living in an old paradigm and they don't believe what's going on. So if the child is identifying things but an adult or a professional can't see them or feel them, doesn't have their own intuitive or psychic senses, then it's very difficult for them to help a child because they don't believe and can only help if you believe. And then the videos also cover what you can do as a parent, teacher, educator, or health professional to really bridge the understanding to children and youth's behavior to help them to shift. And then other things like why helping your children and youth tune into their spiritual wisdom and psychic intuitive abilities can keep them safe and keep yourself safe. And I've got some fun games and exercises you can do with your children and youth to just help them to tune into their spiritual gifts, including psychic and intuitive gifts, which all have a bearing. These are all your inner guidance system. And it's with this inner guidance system that you make the wisest and best decisions for your life. So these are tools to really equip your child with, and it's best to start as early as possible. And then I also give the template for success as a parent, teacher, educator, health professional to helping your children. It's your own success template to helping them, to support them to greater happiness. And so it's really 3 hours of training that will open your brain, expand your consciousness and your heart, and help you to understand your children and youth better, as well as really, it's the incredible, inspiring future that you face. So I know that many parents, for example, are just really struggling. It's a lot of work if your children have been diagnosed with disorders and you're in the search for what it's all about. And I'm not saying that the spiritual and soul piece is the only component of it. As I've heard the other experts in your series talk about, we're mind, body, spirit, and emotion. And we need to acknowledge all parts of that and to really feed children and youth souls with all of the right ingredients on all of those levels. But this part is also one part, the spiritual and soul aspect of children and youth.
Well, and I must say, I had the opportunity to watch in advance some of the videos, and it's just mind-blowing. I was mesmerized by what you had to share and the examples you were giving and also the very sound advice you're giving. And I find it unbelievable that you're sharing all of this absolutely free. 3 hours of incredible information. Ellen, I love it.
Well, thank you, Astrid. I just feel that it's the time for adults really to receive all this information and this knowledge, because otherwise I think we're going to often continue to actually do disservice to children and youth in the belief system that we're currently in. And I would love the information to go out globally, this phenomenal telesummit that you brought together with people from around the world listening in is really going to help that to happen, because we do need to raise our consciousness and raise our vibration, actually, I'll express it in that way, to the level of consciousness of many of these children. And there are also many other ways that they need our wisdom as adults to support them in their lives, to fulfill the purpose for which they've come and to use all their incredible gifts. And so that's why I wanted, this is more than a decade's worth of work. And it didn't even all fit, of course, into, 3 one-hour free training videos. But I wanted to give people as much as possible, because I just feel that this is the best service, really in service of children and youth, but in service to all.
Well, what I really want to honor is, in helping your children, you're also helping yourself, because a child that you perceive to be misbehaving constantly and acting out is a huge drain on your own well-being. So thinking of yourself, it is most important to help your child. And the other thing I feel is that helping these children to really be allowed to be who they are is what contributes to a world of global peace and to a society where much of the thrive and of the battling and competition and the nitty-gritty of what we are doing to each other can really be eliminated, because anyone who is really doing their own purpose and passion is no longer interested in comparing or being better to someone else. They are fulfilled with what they are doing, and they don't need to step on somebody else's feet in order to elevate themselves. So I'm very, very appreciative of what you're doing in this world. And again, I'm blown away that you're giving all of this away for free. All this experience of 10 years packed into 3 one-hour videos. And I really invite our listeners to make use of this.
And Astrid, where will the listeners be able to opt in to get the free videos? Will there be a link on your website?
Definitely, yes.
All right.
There will be a link underneath the interview, and I'll also put it on the speaker schedule, so anybody coming in later when the current interviews are already taken down, they can still take a look at the links and at the offer. And I think you're one of those gracious people who is not going to take down the special offer within a week.
No.
But rather, you're going to leave it up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's so even if you miss Ellen's replay, we will have this opportunity for you to listen into these free audios. Ellen, thank you, thank you, thank you. It was wonderful. It was content-packed. I think you really had many points which have got many people to start thinking in new ways and looking at children in totally new ways and helping their children, themselves, and our world. Thank you very much. Anything else you want to add?
Well, I would just really like to thank you, Astrid, for hosting this telesummit. And I also, again, want to really honor the teachers, parents, educators, the health professionals, all who care about children who are tuned in to your program. And just loved being here and speaking with you today, and all the best with your work, and also all the best to your listeners in your journey with your children and youth whom you parent or you steward.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Astrid.